Today at True Patriot Love, we're spinning the wheel of deficits, joined by Franco Terzano to see what the government might cut. But will they really? As the fourth quarter rolls in and the pressure keeps building, the question looms: are we staring down the biggest budget deficit in Canadian history and possibly at the worst time? Because timing in politics is everything. One wrong move, one bad call, this could be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And could this send us spiraling towards economic trouble or even a non-confidence election? Watch, learn, and stay tuned, because right now, this turning point in Canadian history is on us, the people, to pay attention, to understand, to see where the wheel lands next. Hello, everyone. Today, I am lucky enough to have Franco Terzano from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation with us, and we're going to talk about the PBO and our upcoming November 4th budget. So, Franco, welcome, and give us some thoughts on what's about to happen.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on. It's my pleasure. I mean, look, I'm very, very worried about the finances of our country. Right? The debt is absolutely out of control. Interest charges are blowing more than a $1 billion hole in the budget every single week. So I think the biggest thing that I'm concerned about, and we can get to this in a bit, is that you're hearing a lot of noise from the Carney government, right? A lot of complexity, trying to muddy the waters about splitting the budget. Folks, we have to cut through that noise, cut through that spin, and we got to look at the one number that truly matters in this year's budget. And that's how fast is the debt going up?
Yeah, Franco, you know what? I'm going to put a clip on. So, Nick, throw this clip up, which is very interesting, you know, and I'm glad you hit on it right away. The speak of the parliamentary budget officer, you know, very interesting the way he goes at it. So let's take a look and pop it up for a minute. Let's watch a few seconds.
Warning. We project the budgetary deficit will be $68.5 billion. That's billion with a B. We project the federal debt to GDP ratio will be 42.5% of GDP this year.
How alarming is that for the average Canadian, for the taxpayer? Because there is only one taxpayer, right?
Stupefying. Shocking. Right? This is not, it's not a funny fiscal outlook. It's a really serious fiscal outlook.
Are we closer to where we were in the mid-90s than we were 10 years ago?
The numbers in the mid-90s were far more alarming. If we don't change things, we're going to end up there again.
When do you project the budget
to... Yeah. So, Franco, here's the interesting thing, right? So this Jason Jock, the new parliamentary budget officer, I'm going to call him PBO for those... as an acronym, but you know, he's in on an interim basis. He's put in by the government, and he gets up and he gives us these interesting sound bites. I find the messaging interesting on this one. You know, it's shocking, stupefying. You know, it's continuing at $60 billion. And so, you know, I put together, Nick, throw the PowerPoint, not the wheel, the PowerPoint up, but the, you know, it's interesting that, you know, we did a show earlier and we talked about revenues and expenses of this government, right? And so in 2024, we had a $61 billion budget deficit. And we have only so many ways that we can either make revenue or generate revenue in this government. So whether it be personal tax, whether it be corporate tax, GST, energy tax, excise tax, EI, other revenue, and of course the awful carbon tax that they put on and then took off, you know, that generated in 2024 $459 billion in revenues. Then Nick, go to the next one. Then they have the opportunity of looking at expenses, so they can cut expenses. Of course, there's always that. And you know, of course, you know, you have transfers to people, which is basically the elderly, child benefits, EI. Or you can have transfers to the provinces, you can have government, or the Crown Corporation. So there's only so many ways to do it, you know, and basically that's your opportunity. And if you go to the last slide, Nick, you'll see that, quite frankly, going into COVID, we kind of had this manageable. You know, we were at $13 billion roughly in deficits. Coming out of COVID, you know, in 2024, we're now at 60. And this guy gets up, this interim PBO, he sits in the chair in front of everyone. He says, well, it's terrible. It's stupefying. It's not as bad as 95, but, you know, it looks like we're going to carry $60 billion deficit. So really what he's saying, I think, and this is where I wanted your opinion on, in my mind, he's saying to us that it's never going back. You know, it's like one of those things that once you get there, you know, like kind of like home prices, it's never going to go down again, which we're finding that's not the truth. But, you know, it's not going to go back. We're not going to reduce deficits, and we're going to keep moving forward at $60
billion. Okay, so my read is slightly different, okay? So my read yep. isn't that it can't go back. It absolutely can go back, right? If you look at the mid-90s under the Kretchen-Martin liberals, the deficit equivalent to today was about $150 billion, right? And they were able to balance the budget in 3 years. And it was mostly due to spending cuts, right? Like you even talk about the bureaucracy. There was tens of thousands laid off or removed from the federal bureaucracy. Like, so we are in a similar scenario today. The deficit isn't as big, but like folks, like think about how alarming it is that those are the words used by the parliamentary budget officer, right? That wasn't me in committee saying stupefying, shocking, something is gonna break, this is unsustainable. That was the government's own independent, nonpartisan budget watchdog using those terms, right? That should be a fire alarm going off in the prime minister's office saying you have to cut spending. And I'll get into, you know, just how crazy spending has grown over the last little year, over the last little while. But let me hone in on another number that the PBO didn't mention: interest charges on the debt. They're going to cost taxpayers $55 billion this year. Well, what's $55 billion? First of all, that's a brand new hospital every single week that is not getting built because that money is going to pay interest on the federal government credit card. Second of all, the federal government is wasting more money paying interest on the debt than what it sends to the provinces in healthcare transfers. Or think about it this way. Interest charges on the federal debt will cost each Canadian $1,300 this year. Right? That's $1,300 that the government is taking from Canadians, not going to services, not even going to pay down the debt. That's $1,300 the government is taking from Canadians just to pay interest charges on the debt.
Yeah, no, I know. I get you. So here, Nick, go to the wheel for a minute. So, you know, we put this wheel up the other day, you know, and we were kind of joking around when we did it, but what we said is, okay, now I'm sitting in the government's shoes. I'm sitting there, you know, around the inner circle of the cabinet, and I have a number of decisions to make, right? So, you know, what do you cut and what do you grow? So if you spin the wheel, right, you'll see, you know, I have to figure out, you know, what is the first thing I cut? Okay, interest to debt? Well, I guess, can I cut it? No, right? I can start getting it to go down. I can start moving the direction of it, but that's a fixed cost that I'm stuck with, right?
Well, the way to get interest charges on the debt, which by the way, folks, if we talk about the government waste all the time, it's really interest charges on the debt that are the biggest waste of all, right? But the way that you get interest charges to go down is that you have to start chipping away at the debt, right? Which means right. You have to balance the budget, you have to stop borrowing money, and you got to start running surpluses to bring the debt down to lower interest charges or the interest payments on that debt.
Right. All right, Nick, next thing. So interest is going to be tough to do until you start going in that direction, right? Excise tax, right? So I don't know. What do you do with excise tax? You're not doing as much trade. So what's going to happen? Is that a, you know, expense? Is it a revenue? Like, how do you generate any more from this category?
Well, you shouldn't generate any more from the excise tax. In fact, like let me talk about a form of excise taxation that has actually been really pernicious over the last couple of years, and that's alcohol taxes, federal alcohol taxes. Okay, so since 2018, the federal government has essentially brought in an escalator tax on alcohol, right? So the government has been raising alcohol taxes every single year without a vote in parliament, essentially since 2018. And we're at the point now where if you look at all the taxes you pay, okay, when you buy a pint of beer to enjoy with your buddies when you're, you know, watching a ball game or a hockey game, about half the price of that pint of beer is taxes. All right. Like, so every time you buy a beer, you're essentially buying another one for the tax man. You look at wine, okay? You want to enjoy a glass of Pinot with your better half. Well, about two-thirds of that price is tax. And it's even more when you're buying like whiskey or rum or vodka, right? So if anything, like there's no way the government should be taking more money from taxpayers through these excise taxes. It should A, eliminate this undemocratic form of taxation, right? Where politicians take more money from you, but they don't vote on it. And B, they also charge sales taxes on top of excise taxes, right? So a lot of people know that when you go to the pumps, you're paying fuel excise taxes to federal governments and provincial governments. Well, the federal government charges its sales tax on top of the gas taxes, right? It's a tax on tax. So they got to eliminate that for sure.
Right. No, I agree totally. Nick, next one. Oh, carbon tax, right? So government brought it, took it back, gave it back to us. You know, hopefully it's gone. You know, they saw it as a way to raise revenue. Then they just backtracked on it. Is it coming back? Are we ever going to see it again?
Well, you know, let me just add that in one way, the Carney government is pulling a bit of a sleight of hand, right? Saying that it got rid of the carbon tax. Carney canceled the visible portion of the carbon tax, right? The consumer carbon tax. So that's at zero. That's the good news. But the bad news is that there's still two other forms of hidden carbon taxes, right? There's a hidden carbon tax that the Trudeau government brought through fuel regulations. When those regulations are fully implemented, they'll cost up to 17 cents per liter of gas. So that's in a handful of years. But then more to the point, Carney, and he fully supports this, is the industrial carbon tax. The carbon tax on Canadian businesses like fertilizer plants, like utilities, like, you know, steel manufacturers, and also like refineries, for example. And here's the thing, right? Like when you increase costs for fertilizers plants with carbon taxes, well, that makes it more expensive for farmers to grow food and for Canadians to buy food. When you hammer refineries with these industrial carbon taxes, well, that makes it more expensive for you to fuel up your car with gas or diesel, right? So Carney hasn't gotten rid of all carbon taxes. They canceled the visible portion of the carbon tax, but Canadian businesses and Canadians are still paying federal carbon taxes right now.
Well, you know, and that, you know, that's a great point because I was going to bring it up under corporate. You know, from 19 to 24, you know, we saw a $32 billion increase in taxes to corporations. And, you know, I have a couple other companies aside from this. And recently, I noticed that electrical costs just zooming up, right? Like, quite frankly, all the companies are charging almost double for electricity in the upcoming year, right? So it's interesting how costs keep growing and growing on that front. So Nick, next one. Ooh, custom import duties, right? So what do you think? Down, of course?
Yeah. Well, okay. So I'll just preface this. Big surprise. I don't think the government should raise a single tax. In fact, I think the government should be cutting many taxes, right? I think we kind of have to flip the script here in Canada. And the way to dig us out of this mess, both government financially, but also economically, is we need to go on a massive tax cutting campaign. Now, specifically when it comes to tariffs, there's two things that come to mind. So number one, like, okay, Canadians have gotten really angry, to say the least, with the U.S. administration, right, over the tariffs and things right. like that nature. But you know, when all this talk was really happening at the beginning of the year and into the election, my initial thought was like, wait until you find out how much your own governments are taxing you, right? Like Canadian governments are taxing way more from you than the president south of the border. Okay, so the second thing is, remember, folks, like even a retaliatory tariff from the Canadian government, that is a tariff on Canadian businesses and Canadian consumers, right? So even a tariff from the government of Canada, that's paid for by Canadian businesses and Canadian consumers, right? That makes life more expensive. That makes it harder for businesses to be more productive. That makes it harder for us to attract investment. So look, you know, just because the U.S., because Washington, D.C. wants to make life more expensive for Americans, that doesn't mean Ottawa should be making life more expensive for Canadians with these types of taxes.
Agreed. Yeah, and this, you know, definitely not going to go anywhere this year. So next one, Nick. Oh, interesting. So other direct program expenses, right? So this is a category which is kind of the government slush fund, right? This is all the other expenses that they put into other programs. You know, this is one definitely they can attack. I think this is where you were going at the beginning of the show, right? You got to dig deep and go through line by line and start to get rid of, you know, funding that they provide to all the programs, foreign, abroad,
yeah,
homeland. You know, these are the ones that grew. This is, you know, one of the big line items that grew as we got going. And, you know, it's interesting when we looked at it, it's a huge number. Like, I'm just trying to find it here, but amazing how big this number is when you look at it.
Well, hey, why don't I can give you some examples of where the government has to cut, but why don't I just set the stage here in terms of spending over the last little while? Okay. So look, the federal government under Trudeau was spending all-time highs even before COVID-19. Okay, so in 2018-19, the last year before COVID, the federal government was spending all-time highs even after accounting for inflation and population growth, which means that before any pandemic, before any recession, Trudeau was spending more than what the federal government did during any single year when we were fighting the Nazis. Right. So let's just put that into perspective. Like, the federal government was spending like crazy even before COVID. Then the pandemic happens and the government uses the cloud of COVID to go on a debt-fueled spending spree. Right. Like, of all the hundreds of billions of dollars in new announced spending, 35% of it during COVID had nothing to do with the pandemic. Right. So the government used the cloud of COVID to go on a debt-fueled spending spree. And since then, from both Trudeau and now Carney, you see the government continue to spend billions upon billions of upon billions of dollars more every single year. So, like, no kidding, this is unsustainable. No kidding, the debt has more than doubled over the last 10 years. And no kidding, Canadians are getting absolutely taken to the cleaners because interest charges are now costing us more than $1 billion every week.
Right. And this makes up, I just took a look, actually, Franco, on this. This makes up like literally almost $100 billion. This is a crazy number. Like, and every time I see this, and, I know it includes stuff like defense and justice, but it is a very big number. So there is room for it.
Well, and you mentioned international aid or spending money overseas, right? So let's break that down. So number one, right. Global Affairs Canada is the perhaps the biggest waste offender in the entire federal government. And that's saying a lot, right? Because there's a lot of other departments that are spending money like crazy. But like, Global Affairs Canada is the same department that is spending $51,000 a month on booze. They spend $8,800 on a sex toy show in Germany. They spend 12 grand so seniors in other countries could talk about their sex lives in front of live audiences. And these aren't even Canadian seniors, right? The government is outsourcing old people's sex stories. But then they're also wasting money on the big stuff, right? So if you look at all the departmental spending on, for example, foreign aid, in the most recent year, the government spent about $11 billion on foreign aid, okay? That's almost twice as much as what the government spent through the entire Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yeah, that's crazy. That you know, and we've talked about that before. And that, you know, that's that slush fund, I call it, where money, you know, after they're through all our direct programs, they just put this big hunk of change aside, you know, roughly $50 billion, and it just goes all over the place. Nick, next one. So this is interesting. We could spend a whole day on this one, Franco. So, you know, and this is, you have your healthcare expenditures, which you hit on, and then you have all these programs, you know, as we go through and we see provinces are in deficits, except for, you know, one, quite frankly, you have all these other programs that the federal government puts money in, subsidizes. You know, that it starts at the provincial level, the municipal level, then it makes its way up to the federal level. And of course, you know, healthcare is a whole realignment we have to look at. So this line item, a huge line item, but it really needs retooled all around.
Well, it does. I mean, and if you want to talk about the health transfer, I mean, look, first of all, what has to happen? We have to see a change in our healthcare system, the way it's delivered, right? Like dumping more money into or dumping more water into a leaky barrel, you're just going to get water all over the floor. And that's essentially what's happening with healthcare transfers and really government monopolized or quasi monopolized healthcare here in Canada, right? So you have to fix the system. It's not just dumping more tax dollars into, like I said, the leaky barrel where you get water all over the floor. But there's another transfer that honestly should be scrapped in its entirety, and that's equalization, right? We've had equalization in Canada for what, decades now? So shouldn't there come a point where provinces are largely self-reliant, right? Like the government already sends buckets of cash to provinces outside of equalization when there are major problems. So like, why do we also have this equalization scheme on top of the health transfer, on top of the social transfer, right? What equalization truly is a slush fund for premiers, predominantly in the East, who are wasting taxpayers' money. And so not only does it hurt the taxpayers, like for example, in Alberta, who pay into equalization, but don't get a cent back, right, in recent years, but it also hurts the people who are living in equalization receiving provinces, because it incentivizes the premiers in the East to rely less on good policies to grow their actual economies and more on tax dollars coming from taxpayers in other provinces. Like equalization is such a bad scheme, and it really does need to be ended. And that's more than $20 billion a year.
Yeah, no. And we're never going to get off it because we're hooked on it now, especially you're right in the East Coast. And we did a whole show. It's interesting, you know, and for another day, but we did a whole show taking a look at comparisons between other countries and spend per caps on healthcare. And it was astonishing what we found out and how much waste we have in our current system based on, you know, per capita numbers by countries. It was wild. So please check that show out. Nick, next one. Oh, so not much we can do with this, as you mentioned, right? So we'd love it to go down, but, you know, at this point, we can't raise more revenue. We're almost, you know, to your point earlier, Franco, you know, that $459 billion, you know, it can yo-yo a little bit in revenues for the federal government, but are there many opportunities left on the revenue side? You know, like really, if you look at it, you know, we have, you know, we're literally personal tax, corporate tax, GST, energy tax, EI and other revenues. Is there anything you can think of we can generate more revenue for Canada, for the federal government?
The way that the government, if we want to talk about government revenues, right? First of all, take tax hikes right off the table, right? But for the government to generate revenue without raising taxes, you got to grow the economy. Right. That's plain and simple. Right. A better economy means people spending more money. There you go. Sales tax revenue. It means people earning more people with jobs. There you go. EI goes down. Income tax revenue goes up. It means businesses come here. It means businesses are more successful. There you go. Higher corporate income tax revenues without raising taxes. Right. So if you want to talk about the revenue side, number one, no tax hikes. In fact, we got to go on a major tax cutting campaign. But number two, the way to do all this is to allow investment and to allow our economy to flourish. And on that note, let me just say, right, a lot of debate right now going on about with our natural resource sector. Look, we are losing out on billions and billions of dollars over the years because you have these politicians, you have these ideologues, you have these activists who are making it nearly impossible for us to attract investment and build major natural resource projects here in Canada. It's those major natural resource projects like pipelines, but like many other things that allows us to have the money to pay for new schools, new hospitals, fix the roads, and to free up the room for tax relief.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. You know, that really is, you know, and we talked about it on a GDP show. It's picking projects that have a positive GDP impact on the country, right? So it's important at this point, given limited resources financially, is to pick projects that are going to grow the country, right? Make us more productive, add to the economy, and to your point, generate more revenues. So far, we're not picking those, right? So far, we haven't done a good job at actually identifying them, picking them, putting them into place, and putting our money behind projects that will grow our GDP, which that's why we've lagged in GDP per capita behind most of the developed nations for years.
Well, you know, let me say something a little bit outside of the box here. And, you know, just stay with me here. But I actually don't think politicians and bureaucrats are the ones who should be picking which projects are so-called in the national interest. Like, I really don't think that that's the way that we should go about it, right? Way that I think we should go about it, and maybe this is a little outside the box thinking, but it's instead of setting up a new office, a new government bureaucracy, right, the major projects office, why don't we address the root problem? Why don't we eliminate the onerous regulations that the government had already put in place that is blocking the investment, right? Like, at the end of the day, when politicians or bureaucrats are spending somebody else's money, not their own money, not their own skin in the game, you might as well just send them to the casino. Like, there is no economic incentive for them to get it right. But also, they don't know which projects are going to succeed. They shouldn't be dumping taxpayers' money into it. So instead of creating a new bureaucracy, I think the best way to go about doing this is just remove the barriers that the government already put in the way.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that's sort of, and you know, your idea is a great idea. Quite frankly, you know, think tanks, which you see some of them, you know, where you're from up in Ottawa, you see some of these think tanks and people that sit down and create policy all the time. You know, getting outside people, entrepreneurs, you know, corporate executives to sit down and actually develop a business plan, right, that ties into where growth for the country goes from a revenue perspective is a totally brilliant idea. And yeah, why not? They're the people that are doing it every day. You know, they're figuring out their companies, environments, and making recommendations to grow. I think that's a terrific idea. Hey, last ones before we go, and I just want to get, so, you know, expenses. So, you know, of course, you know, we left the last kind of two biggest ones, you know, for last. So major transfers to people. You know, so those are kind of the elderly, you know, healthcare, or sorry, childcare, you know, and EI, right? And then the last one probably left on the list that I can think of is probably the government spending, the operating costs, right? So, you know, he's waffled. Originally, he said he was going to address some of these costs with respect to size of government. Then, you know, they just said they'd do it by attrition. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you hearing? And, you know, how does he address that? Because, you know, it all sounds good, but those people, you know, again, you can cut, but then they become unemployed. Unemployment rate's awful high right now. It causes other issues. And I think really, in my mind, you know, it ties to your last comment. You have to create projects to migrate people to, right? So you have to have those positive projects in place when people come out of different industries they can go to. So, and that's something I think we're not doing a terrific job on, and I think it needs a lot more work. But, you know, what's your thought on that? And you know, it's one thing to say just cut, but then these people have to, you know, feed their families, grow. They have to go somewhere. I think mining resources is a really good idea, and shifting people up into the different areas where resources are a terrific idea. Thoughts?
Well, let me just start by saying the government has to cut the bureaucracy. This entire conversation, us climbing our way out of the debt hole, is completely futile unless the government cuts its bureaucracy. Right? Like, let's look over the last 10 years. The government added about 100,000 extra federal bureaucrats and increased the cost of the bureaucracy 77% since 2016. A 77% increase in the cost of the bureaucracy in a decade, okay? You've heard Carney all the time say, balance the operating budget, balance the operating budget, balance the operating budget. Okay, well, number one, that's not a real balanced budget if the government's still borrowing money. But number two, the only way to do that is by firing bureaucrats. There's no other way. Like, I can sugarcoat it. We can say attrition. We could say pay cuts. We could say bonuses, but that's not the truth. It's just not the truth. Like, it's unfortunate that we have gotten so far down the hole with a massive bloat in Ottawa that this is now the case. The government has to cut the number of bureaucrats, right? That is the only way that we're even going to start thinking about chipping our way out of this $1 trillion debt problem that we have. And here's the thing, right? We commissioned a poll from Léger, a reputable national pollster, that, you know, found that half of Canadians say federal services have gotten worse over the decade, not stayed the same. Yeah. Half say they've gotten worse, even though the cost of the bureaucracy has gone up 77%. So look, the number one single item in the budget that has to be cut, there's no way around it, is the federal bureaucracy. And I'll just add that when the Martin Cretchen liberals were able to extinguish a massive deficit largely through spending cuts in the 90s in just 3 years, they also had to tackle the bureaucracy. There is absolutely no way around it. So I think politicians just have to be honest with Canadians about the situation that we are and acknowledge that, yeah, there's going to have to be some government bureaucrats that lose their job. Now, to the last point that you made, I'll just say two things. Number one, government is not meant to be a white collar welfare scheme for government employees in Ottawa. That's not right. That's not what government is here for, right? It's not here to subsidize white collar employees who take a taxpayer funded salary. But number two, I do agree we have to be able to chew gum and walk at the same time, which brings us back to our conversation of allowing investment, allowing businesses to grow. So when people are not employed in the federal bureaucracy, they'll be able to get good paying jobs in the productive sector.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It's interesting because, you know, you see it in America all the time. People move, shift, and pivot, right? And so as times are changing and these things are going to happen, the cuts probably, you know, well, right now, tell you the truth, at a $60 billion budget deficit projected going forward, probably not a lot is going to happen. So if you're going to keep the same deficit moving forward, and that deficit that, you know, the PBO talked about doesn't even include military spending.
Yeah, billions from the Liberal platform that weren't even included there. So, you know, we're looking at what, $68.5 billion is the baseline from the PBO. That's like baseline. That's probably best case scenario.
Yeah. So add military in, you're roughly, you're around $100 billion. So say you're around $100 billion, maybe a little less. But, you know, that means you haven't really cut anything. That means you've just progressed forward for the next 4 years, status quo, because 2024, you came out at a $61 billion deficit anyways. So you're just moving forward. Not sustainable. So, you know, that's why I think, you know, as we were talking, we need to get these projects on the books. And as people shift and pivot, you know, it might be they have to move from where they're at. You know, people will migrate to different places, change industries. You see that more in other nations. Canadians, I know, don't like to do that, but that is reality of the world today.
It is. That's reality. And it's on our politicians to, one, do the hard work. Because, like, let's be honest, right? They're going to have to go toe-to-toe with union bosses. We saw the strike in 2023. Like, I'm not suggesting that this is easy. I'm not, right? They're going to have the spine. They're going to have to say, look, Canadians, this is the debt problem that we're in, this debt crunch that we're facing. We have to cut the size and cost of government. And yes, that's going to mean hard decisions. And yes, that's going to have to mean staring down these government union bosses who are going to, you know, scream that the sky is falling. I'm not suggesting it's easy, but politicians have to be honest with Canadians with the scope of the debt crunch that we're in, and they have to do the hard work.
Do you think the messaging or the PBO messaging that we got, just to end this, you think that's the start of it, or you think he's just new and he's just trying to be honest?
Well, I don't think the PBO is coordinating messaging with the government. I absolutely do not think that. I think he's just being honest. Like, I've had conversations with the PBO. We just interviewed him for the taxpayer show, and he said that he got into this because he really believes in transparency. Right? Just being honest with Canadians. Hey, Canadians, here are the books. This is the problem that we're in. And now it's on politicians and Canadians to debate those problems and move forward.
No, thank you, Franco. I appreciate it. And I'll definitely watch that show too. So thank you again. And we look forward. After November 4th, I want to sit down with you again for a half hour and get your thoughts, because I'm super curious where he's going on November 4th.
Yeah, so am I. I would love to come on the show and have that conversation about the budget.
All right. Thank you.